Hello everyone, welcome to Epizoda podcast. We want to show you what kind of companies we have in the UAE region, inspire you with the great business stories, and introduce you to the cutting-edge technology. A little disclaimer, today's episode is an extract from the video interview, so for the best experience and better context, you can watch the full episode on our YouTube channel. And now, let's jump to the episode.
Like from a city standpoint, like what is your output? It's a function of the productivity of your people, right? If you can bring more efficiency to the way the city moves, it has multiplicative implications. We've seen organic product market fit for micromobility all over the world.
As you already know from episode highlights, today's topic is micromobility. It's quite a popular topic right now and something to look forward in the future. We even have dedicated micromobility district and pavilion in Expo 2020. Today, I'm meeting JD. I think it's the right way to say he's a micromobility guru in UAE. He worked in the companies such as Careem, GrabWheels, Cirque, and now co-founded Phoenix. Phoenix is the leading micromobility operator in the Middle East region. We're gonna go and check them out. Let's take a look. Let's jump into the question straight away. What is the lifetime of the scooter?
We've not actually gone through a full life cycle of the scooter.
Yet. Okay.
Not yet. Because we're very methodical with how we manage vehicle lifetime maintenance, right? Starting with high quality vehicles, they're very durable, very proactive maintenance effort, right? We do quality control checks. And theoretically, you could replace 100%. Of the parts of a vehicle, and it can keep going. Our expectation is like our vehicles should last at least 36 months, right? And based on the current track record, maybe even longer than that.
Okay, so that's quite long.
Yes.
I mean, while you're maintaining.
It's best in class in the industry.
So how long you guys in operation with the scooters?
So with Phoenix, we've been operating since mid-November. Right? So it's been about 8 months now. Before Phoenix, I mean, I've been working micromobility for maybe 4 or 5 years now, since 2017, right? And it's a young industry, so I'm a bit of a dinosaur, right? But I was first with Grab in Southeast Asia, did a lot of work in China. Then I was part of the founding team of Cirque, which is a European and Middle East company, right? And we introduced the concept to the region and had a good level of scale, and now we've been doing it with Phoenix. So a lot of learnings along the way.
Okay. Can we speak a little bit about infrastructure? For the business to operate?
So this is definitely, you know, one of the friction points, right? Because I think like from a demand standpoint, right, what's interesting is like we've seen organic product market fit for micromobility all over the world. We just put scooters on the road and they sell themselves, right? No, you don't have to market it, right? People see it. Awareness is like very fast, right? The need is very frequent, like you're moving every day, right? And adoption is quite quick,
okay.
Right? The constraint is, you know, I would say market acceptance from governments, from cities, from communities, right? And of course, infrastructure is one part of that. It's a big part of that. I think it is a gradual transition, right? Where we need to shift our mindset, right? From away from like building cities for cars to building cities for people, right? Our objective function should be like quality of life, right? And how do we move the most people in our cities? Not how do we move the most cars?
Yeah.
You can call it like an inversion of the transport pyramid. Like today in the Middle East, you need to own a car to get around, right? Because like there's not enough public transit. It's not easy to get there. There's not good infrastructure to ride bicycles and to walk.
Yeah.
Think about the future. And I mean, this is a very expensive current state, right? Cars cost a lot of money for individuals. They cost a lot for cities because the roads cost a hell of a lot. It's not free, right? We don't pay directly. We pay indirectly through taxes, right? Through fees.
I was listening to one of your interviews and really loved your kind of statement that you mentioned. To move a car, it costs to move the car itself. And then it's just 100 kg of the person you're moving.
Absolutely, right? That's what's so unusual about like the status quo, is like today we all move in cars, right? And like the car is, I mean, it's a beautiful device.
2-ton beautiful
right?
device.
It is, you know, gives you so many options for what you can do, right? It's a general purpose device. It's a bundle of different use cases, right? You can move 5 people. You can go at fast speeds. You can carry a lot of stuff in the trunk, right? So whatever you need, you know, car's got you covered. But if you think of it as a bundle of trips that you're prepaying for, right? Like maybe I'm buying, you know, 50,000 trips when I buy this car, right? And some of those trips, sure, you've got 5 people and suitcases and you're driving at, you know, 160.
Twice a year.
Right? But most of the time you're moving by yourself. 70% of trips are single passenger, right? Okay. And you're not even going very fast, right? Because of traffic. Average speed maybe 15, 20 kilometers an hour in some places, right? Yeah. And now if you think about it, you know, I've got this like 2,000 kgs of steel moving 100 kgs of passenger, right? 2 to 3 kilometers, right? 20 kilometers an hour, right? Like, what am I paying for?
It just doesn't make sense.
I'm paying to move the car, not to move me,
true.
Right? And that's the genesis of micromobility. And this is why I call it a disruptive innovation. Ride-hailing is actually an iterative innovation, a sustaining innovation. It took the current status quo and like made it more accessible, right? Through technology. But it did not change the fundamental cost structure, right? With micromobility, now you've got a vehicle that's 1% the mass of a car. It's 20 kgs versus 2,000 kgs.
So 20 kgs moving 100 kgs.
Yes. Now it's like, okay, I'm moving me. Right?
Yeah,
I'm paying to move me, right? Not to move the car, right? And it's electric drivetrain. So 90% energy efficiency. Combustion engine is 30%,
okay.
Right? So it's actually 100x on a per kilometer basis, right? Your fuel costs, your energy costs are much lower. On top of that, it's already self-driving. Right? You drive yourself. You're not paying for a private chauffeur to drive you around.
Yeah.
Right? So labor costs are reduced. Right? And so yes, much more affordable for me, right? And actually much more efficient for cities. We look all over the world, right? Everyone is moving to cities, right? Over like our generation, like urban populations have really grown.
Yeah.
Right? This is like where the action is, where the jobs are, the opportunities are, right? And demographics are all young. So all the young people are moving to cities. Right? And they're all buying cars. There's more and more cars getting on the road, and there's not enough space to expand the roads
in existing cities.
So you have this pileup of traffic, right? A lot of cities now, and traffic has been getting a lot worse. We don't realize it, but like that's time that we're losing, right? If I'm spending an hour each way commuting, right? That's 2 hours of my day that I could be doing a lot of other things, right? I could be earning,
educating, earning. Right?
I could be learning. I could be nurturing. I could be sleeping, taking care of my health, right? So many alternative uses of that time, right? And that's why we say that mobility is actually a regressive tax, because the less you make, the more you pay. In terms of share of income, right? The richest maybe pay less than 1% of their income on mobility.
Okay, so why? Because they live nearby?
Yeah, they live close to work, right? They own cars. They go on their own schedule. It doesn't grow with income, right? The
sure.
cost of mobility is more linear from a financial standpoint.
What about poorest?
Everyone else, right? We take public transit, right? We live farther away. Our share of income, maybe 20%, 10%, right? It's a lot more in terms of financial costs. But then think about time, opportunity cost. Someone who's spending 15 minutes a day versus someone who's spending 2 or 3 hours a day. That is your potential that's getting taxed, right?
So micromobility would saving that time for the travel?
And it's a bit of a complex topic, right? But we talked about like cost structure. Financial cost can be less, right? To take a scooter, an e-bike, an e-moped, mechanical bike, what have you. It makes public transit more accessible. We're talking about from a city standpoint is it can help reduce congestion because
sure.
One car lane actually doesn't move that many people because the cars generally have one person per car and they have all this space between the cars when they're moving, right? If you repurpose that car lane for micromobility, you know, you actually move six times the people
more
in the same amount of space. This is not a 5% gain. This is a 500% gain.
True.
Right? Any city that's grappling with congestion, like this is like a no-brainer. This is a way to address it and then drive access to public transit, which is the most efficient way to move people. You're talking about, you know, we want to drive economic output, right? What is your output? It's a function of the productivity of your people.
Yes.
Right? If you can bring more efficiency to the way the city moves, you can increase the productivity of your people, increase the output of the economy, right? So it's a, it has multiplicative implications.
Okay. Since you mentioned, like, let's replace one lane of the road,
yes,
you know, for micromobility, do you think something gonna happen? Is anybody pushing? Do you guys wish that?
For sure. So it's already happening. The constraint right now is not market potential, right? Actually, it's capital, right? Because like, look at a city like Dubai, right? 3 million people, probably 10 million trips a day, right? Medium term, you know, maybe 30, 40% of those trips can be substituted by shared micromobility. That's 3 to 4 million trips a day, right? That's a hell of a lot of trips, right? And that's on existing trip demand. Once you make it more affordable and accessible, there's all sorts of new demand that gets unlocked. To service that many trips, I mean, you're talking about like, you know, hundreds of thousands of vehicles, right? And this might scare people, like, oh my God, he's gone crazy.
Right?
But think about it, like, how many cars do we have today in Dubai? Probably 2 million, right?
Yeah,
we accept that, right? 2 million cars. Why should, you know, micromobility be much, much less than cars when they're much more efficient, right? In the future state, you should have much fewer cars, actually, and much more micromobility because it can drive access to a shared vehicle in a way that you can't get to otherwise.
So it just makes
sense. So today, right, we focus on the areas where the infrastructure is conducive, right? And so maybe the whole city is not ready, but there's definitely pockets in every city where it's safe to ride a bike, right? And if you can ride a bike, you can ride a scooter. So it can be, you know, dedicated, protected bike lanes. I mean, that would be great. It could be, you know, just you know, bumper lanes. It could be broad pavements. It can be slow speed roads. Like, main point is, like, people need to feel safe when they're riding, right? And there's many, many areas which fulfill that criteria today.
I've been in Denmark, in Copenhagen. Yeah, they have a separate lane with a bump. You feel so secure.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know that, you know, a car not gonna drive in your lane.
Yeah. So I think, like, in today's technology driven age, right, we are used to, like, overnight adoption of new services. But what's different with micromobility is we're not just talking about bits, we're talking about atoms, right? It's a physical experience in the real world. And it takes time to transition infrastructure to accommodate it. So it's happening. I mean, you look at all the progress around the world and in the region, every major city has introduced shared micromobility, right? And actually not that much time, right? In the span of like 2-3 years. Tremendous progress,
true,
right? So there's growing and growing evidence and acceptance that this needs to be a core element of an integrated multimodal network, not a standalone solution. No one's saying get rid of the car or like get rid of the metro.
Give us
like
the space.
Make it all fit together, right? And with more data of actual behavior change, benefits, etc. I mean, those zones are going to expand, right? It's just a matter of time.
Okay. How many operators are in the region?
Must be a dozen shared micromobility operators in the Gulf.
Yeah.
You have different archetypes of companies, right? There are a couple international companies, small businesses as well. And you don't need to be a multinational, right, to do something like this. I mean, some of the basic ingredients are there. You can buy scooters. You can license white label software. I think, you know, to really bring a deep solution for the market, you do need to be able to customize or localize the technology.
Yeah.
And so this is what we're doing at Phoenix, right? you saw some of the aspects on the hardware front, but even on the software front, right? We've been localizing our experience for this region. For example, making it more inclusive from a payment standpoint, right? Not everyone has a credit card or bank account, right? So now we allow you to actually pay with your smartphone balance, right? So every adult has a smartphone, and there's many ways to top up your smartphone carrier balance, and we piggyback on that and facilitate that as a payment channel on Phoenix.
Okay. So let's say I have Virgin Mobile, I have, I don't know, 200 on the credit, and I can check out with these credits.
Yeah, that's the idea, right? So currently we're working with Etisalat, and a few other partners are coming on board. If you have a prepaid balance, right, you can just deduct that or transfer that balance to Phoenix and pay for your ride.
Any kind of failures that became a good lesson for you personally in the business operation?
Doing a startup, it's not easy for sure. Requires a lot of perseverance. There are a lot of things that can be better. Big lesson for us is, you know, get a product to customers as soon as possible, right? Don't wait for it to be perfect, right? Because your definition of perfect is probably the wrong definition. Once you get something in customers' hands, you learn a lot faster about what they really need and what they really care about and how can we refine that to meet, you know, their needs. I think that's been a good lesson. And probably many more.
Because you guys scaled quite quickly. How many employees you guys have?
Today, we're about 150 people in the company. You know, being vertically integrated, this means many different functions, right? There's a technology team, you know, customer care, marketing, business development, government relations, right? And then a large share of the team is actually in operations, not just ops managers, but even, you know, the field associates. I think this is something that we do a bit differently from most other companies in the region. Here, all of our staff is employed by Phoenix and shareholders of Phoenix. We made this decision for a few different reasons, right? But big picture, it's because it drives the best financial performance and the highest quality. Our staff are instilled with an ownership mindset, right? Because they're a shareholder.
Can you explain a little bit more about it?
We care a lot more about the little things, right? Everyone is customer facing, actually, especially our operations team. We're very proud that we've made this investment in our talent, and you know, we seek to cultivate them as leaders in our company, right? Build a career for them, not just a paycheck. That has resonated in the market. It's the reason why we leapfrogged these dozen companies, became number one in a relatively short amount of time. It's the reason why we're a partner of choice with all the different transport agencies, all the different real estate developers, because they know with Phoenix, they're going to get the highest quality service.
Okay, because all the team.
Because of the team.
Care about details.
Absolutely.
How do you guys planning to create that logistics and everything in order to deliver in 10 minutes groceries, like as you mentioned?
So this is a new area that we're very excited about. The reason why we're getting into grocery deliveries is actually as a mobility business, right, two of the core elements that we need are cost-efficient logistics and actually also payments so that we can reach everyone. Right? We've already been doing deliveries for Phoenix Mobility. It's a natural extension actually for us to get into delivering other things, right? And groceries seem like a great category because, truthfully, we've taken inspiration from what we've seen in other geographies. The promise of 10 minutes has really resonated with customers, right? If you put a customer hat on, right, with another one of our values, customer obsession. So it's a paradigm shift. And once you have groceries available essentially on demand, right, now you can take away the planning from groceries. Imagine having a supermarket on demand in your kitchen, whatever you need. And so to achieve this, like we need to be super optimized, right? We have dark stores, you know, in optimal locations in dense urban areas, right? Where there's a lot of demand within a narrow radius. right? The inventory within that dark store also needs to be optimized based on the demand of that customer base, right? And then, you, like we do with mobility, we need full-time employees in the dark store. So as soon as an order is placed, like, we accept it instantly, within seconds. By the way, using scooters or e-bikes, right, is the optimal way to deliver small parcels in dense urban areas as well.
Yeah.
And think about JLT, right, a Dubai example, right? If I have to deliver something in JLT, I gotta go on a huge loop, right? And then, like, look for a place to park.
Yeah,
and
there's if not you much go with parking, the car, yeah, it's terrible.
Right? But with the scooter, like, now I can go around the lake, right? And, you know, get there in very little time, right? So I think this is going to be quite a disruptive category. And it's a, like, offering that this region has never seen before. 10 minutes, no delivery fee, no minimum order. Like, we can do it because we own the full value chain. We have all the fixed costs, right?
Yeah. And you operate the store itself as well.
Yes.
We just did episode as well with e-commerce company, RoboStores. They said as well, like, the biggest challenge now as well as delivery.
Yeah.
How does the future will look like? So do you think most of us or all of us are going to shift kind of from the heavily usage of the car and we're going to jump to scooters or any other mobility, micro-mobility kind of equipment?
Yeah, I think there's three mega trends in, or maybe four, in mobility. One is electrification, right? Two is autonomy. Three is sharing, right? And then four, I'll say, is like, you know, unbundling the car. So I think, like, the mega trends are, like, in our favor, right? This is, like, a much more affordable form factor, right, that we can deploy at scale a lot faster than, like, if we had to put, like, you know, 1,000 EVs, electric cars, right, you're talking about millions and millions of dollars to do that.
Sure.
Right? 1,000 scooters, right, you're talking about $500,000, right? So you can scale a lot faster. I think the future, right, people are going to be seeing a gradual shift in their mobility behavior. There will be a decline in private car ownership as alternatives become more viable, right? Even like car sharing, right? One of the challenges is, like, you know, density of cars.
True.
How do you get to one, right? But when you look at it as a multimodal network, hey, ride a scooter to the car, right? Then you don't need as many shared cars in a city, right? That shared car can be used by many people. And then the ROI on the investment is also higher.
I used back in the days as well, car sharing, either e-car or U-Drive. I'm in GBR and yes, the car is somewhere in the marina.
Yeah.
For me, walking, you know, like 10 minutes, cycle, 3 minutes. Okay, micromobility
That's
with
right.
the scooters can sort out this. I'm looking forward for it.
Yeah, same here. Well, thank you so much for coming today to Phoenix. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
A small gift for you. This is actually something we give to all of our My Phoenix subscribers. Maybe you can take a peek.
Okay, it's a helmet.
Yes.
So what you said you're giving to your subscribers?
Yeah, so when we give you a free home delivery of your private scooter, we also give you a free helmet, right? A reflective vest, right? In the color of your choice. And yeah, just a thank you note as well.
All right,
our
thank
pleasure.
You so much.
Yes.
That was a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe and follow us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Also, check it out our Episode Up YouTube channel to get the best show experience. Be inspired, get ideas, learn from business mistakes, and discover the United Arab Emirates business community. Thank you so much, and till the next episode.